From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, for this half hour, we're going to try to follow the money a little bit here and report on a story that has raised at least some level of confusion, whether you've been reading along in the Democrat and Chronicle or WXXINews.org, we hope, or other media sources. We're talking about the state comptroller, and the audit of the county practices as they manage three golf courses in our area. State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli saying that the county failed to monitor the contractor who operated the golf course, and essentially that this was a $250,000 cost to taxpayers. Now, Monroe County has shot back saying, number one, they think this is a political hit job in an election year, and number two, they think that the report is all wrong. We invited the county to come on with us. They did release a statement. The county declined to come on the program, but we will be reading from their statement. And in studio with us is Democratic State Legislator Joe Morelli Jr. Joe, nice to see you.
Thanks, Evan. I'm happy to be here. Well, thanks for the invitation.
Yes, it's Joe Morelli. There's a junior on there. Just so
that's
people know.
Correct.
Well, we always there's similar vocal intonation. We want to make sure people know who we're talking to. Let me start with this. When we follow this report, this is an audit that's been sort of building, we've been hearing about for a long time to come. Now, give us a little background on the county management of three different golf courses, Joe?
That's correct. So the county manages Durand Eastman, Genesee Valley, and Churchville Clubs golf courses. The audit came out the other day, and basically the state audit is highly critical of the county's management of the three courses, which is something that Democrats have, in the county legislature for many years, have questioned and asked questions about. And this audit, after reading through it, kind of confirms what we were talking about.
Okay. And if any of our listeners have been out in these golf courses, or if you haven't, you might have heard that conditions have not been great in recent years, and perhaps it's been more difficult weather years, et cetera, but that's part of operating a golf course.
Welcome to Rochester.
Welcome to Rochester. Yeah, right. Welcome to Western New York. How would you describe the conditions, that you've seen?
Yeah, deplorable is the only word really to describe it. I've had many constituents reach out to me, and people who are playing there on a regular basis. The greens have mold on them. The fairways are not being kept. A lot of sand, a lot of dirt, and not playable to conditions that golf courses should be. Look, golf is an awesome sport. Evan, you and I were talking about it a little bit. I'm terrible at golf, but still try and get out and play every now and then. But for people who perhaps can't afford to play at the Oak Hills of Rochester or the other private courses, these courses are an alternative. And it's a great alternative. Golf's a fun sport to play. And we want to encourage people to get out, certainly in a time when people are talking about exercising and getting out more, out in the sun on the sunny days we have in Rochester. These are an asset. And for the county to have completely let them go is a sad turn of events.
All right. If you want to join the program, and I see we already have one call, we're going to get to that in just a second. You can call toll-free 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. County Executive Maggie Brooks was on this program in February, and she indicated that the county probably shouldn't be in the business of running golf courses to begin with. Do you agree or disagree, Joe?
I don't disagree with the fact that the county shouldn't be in the business. I think there's professionals who do it and know how to manage a golf course. But that being said, the Brooks administration should be on top of that contract. Look at financial mismanagement is a huge piece. Staffing mismanagement, lack of required investment, that was a huge piece. So the county required in the contract that over a course of 5 years, $100,000 was supposed to be invested each year, to which we're finding out those investments weren't made and that Tyndale Corp never put that money in. So the county should give the contract to someone else, but the county shouldn't simply walk away like the Brooks administration has done and said, oh, well it's being done by someone else, not our problem, especially when the county could have financially benefited. So there was a percentage of sales that the county would have gotten. That's all money we could have been collecting had the operator put the money into the courses and people started going more. But the number of golf passes being sold has dropped because who wants to play at lousy courses?
All right, so again, if you're on the phone, hang in there for a second because I want to go over some of the specific points that not only Mr. DiNapoli's raised, but what Monroe County is now responding to. And there's a couple of them. They talk about capital improvements. We talk about Mr. DiNapoli saying it's cost taxpayers $250,000. I should say $250,000. So let's talk about some of that money.
Okay.
What's the concern about where that $250,000 has gone? What is Mr. DiNapoli saying? What are you concerned about, Joe?
Well, so as we're reading through the report, and truthfully, we're still going through it and trying to figure out what happened. And from our side of the aisle, we have a lot more questions. And certainly one of them is, where did that money go? And it's something that we're going to ask the county administration, and they're going to need to answer that for us. Going back to the money that wasn't spent, essentially $250,000, that all could have been put into and was supposed to be put into the courses. And had that been the case, the county would have financially benefited.
But is the allegation that Tyndale Corp pocketed that money and with a wink and a nod, and the course wasn't improved, and a lot of people made a lot of money?
That's the ultimate question that we're still trying to figure out. Where did that money go? And the county administration is going to have to answer that question. It's something that the report, while very detailed, an excellent job by the auditors here in our area and by the comptroller's office, really spelled out what's going on. But we need to know where that money went, and if it was county dollars, or was it money that Tyndale was supposed to put in on his own?
Joe Morelli Jr. is a Monroe County Democratic lawmaker who's joining us in studio talking about this audit and following the money here. We invited folks from the Brooks administration and from the Parks Department to join us if they would like. They referred us to a statement, and I'm going to be getting to that in a second because I think it's important to understand what they're saying about this as well here. We talked about we'll hear what they say about the $250,000, but essentially what Monroe County's government is saying is they have this wrong, and here is part of their response to us. Quote, the comptroller's $250,000 figure results from a disagreement over accounting standards that dictate what qualifies as a capital expense. And here's from the county's response. Quote, local governments generally adhere to the standards delineated under general municipal law, in addition to mutual contract interpretation, and the enclosed 2004 guidelines Exhibit A from the county controller sets clear standards for capital improvements under the contract. Did you follow all that? I hope you followed
all
that.
Well, Evan,
I'm not done. Okay, I'm not done. Right. Let me finish it. Itemized report submitted by the operator to the county's finance department, documents that were shared with Mr. DiNapoli's review staff, also demonstrate that the annual capital investment milestones set by the contract were met. So let me read that again. The investment milestones set by the contract were met. And they enclose a chart there saying, that may be a lot of stuff to wade through there in terms of the language there. But, Joe, what the county is saying is there were milestones and standards, and we met them, and that the improvements were made, and that Mr. DiNapoli is out of bounds with this.
Well, so the county is trying to say that Mr. DiNapoli's staff did something wrong, which isn't the case. These are professionals who focus on local government and schools. That's the area that was focused on here, right? So they do this every single day. For the county to say the auditing process is incorrect is laughable. Truthfully, as you were reading the statement, I was laughing. That's one. The other part is, so the county says, well, capital improvements were done. The comptroller's office says, no, they weren't. So the argument then falls under state law. What is deemed a capital improvement project? Mowing the lawn is not a capital improvement project. So the county can't continue to say, well, we're doing capital improvement projects by going out every day and mowing the lawn. You buy a lawnmower, sure, that's a capital improvement project, and that's what the audit says. The state audit continues to say this is what qualifies. Under state law, this is what it is. Part of the statement that the county released is, well, the comptroller's office doesn't understand auditing practices. No, actually, that's completely false. They do know auditing practices. They do it all the time. They're the professionals.
Now, they're also saying, though, that this is an election year. Mr. DiNapoli is running, and he's a Democrat, and this is a Republican administration. And those things are all true, by the way.
Yeah.
Do we need a more bipartisan way of is the comptroller's office trusted? If it were staffed by a Republican, would you trust it?
I would trust the comptroller's office because they're professionals who, as I keep saying, that's what their job is. They're bipartisan, right? They're nonpartisan. That's what they are. They're nonpartisan.
Now, you believe they're nonpartisan?
I 100% believe that the auditors are nonpartisan. The comptroller himself, yes, is a Democrat. But this is something that we have been asking for a very long time. It finally took us reaching out to the comptroller's office, asking for him to do the audit, that we're actually gotten anywhere. If you look, and the audit does show that the county did their own audits. And those audits said, basically, the comptroller's report says that their audits, the county's audits, were not done correctly. So, yes, I believe that this is a fair audit. I believe that the comptroller's office is nonpartisan, that they have a very specific goal in mind. And for the county to say this is, oh, just continued political agenda by the comptroller is just laughable.
Before I get to the phones, one more question along those lines. Do you think statewide the comptroller's office has the respect of governmental bodies, et cetera, that says when they issue audits and reports, they're respected and honored?
Oh, I believe that wholeheartedly. I think that people across the state know that the comptroller is simply looking at the numbers, the facts, and they're presenting them in a way for people to understand.
And if it's a Republican who's elected next, mm-hmm. and they're auditing a Democratic administration, mm-hmm. you're not going to come in here and tell me, well, they're a Republican comptroller and this is a Democratic administration and we're not comfortable with that.
No, I'm going to say that it is, if auditors came in and did it, then they had a job to do, then I believe what that report says.
Let's get to the phones. This is Jack. Jack, thanks for calling. You're on with Joe Morelli, Jr.
Hi, I'm just wondering if Joe knows or anyone knows who's going to take over the courses next year.
Well, that's a great question. We don't know yet. There is a process in which the county has gone out with an RFP, or request for proposal, on a contractor to come in and do it. But no, and certainly us in the Democratic minority have not been privy to the conversation. But one of the things that I'm asking for, and my colleagues have continued to ask for, is that there be a bipartisan panel put together of Republicans and Democrats in the county legislature to talk about what we need to do moving forward. And that's something that I'm going to push for as we move forward.
Jack, have you been out to the courses?
Oh, sure, almost every day.
What do you think?
Just Genesee Valley. Well, I grew up on a public course in Buffalo that was kind of ratty a long time ago, so my expectations aren't real high for a public course. But I see where it could be improved. In fact, I was on the grounds crew at Oak Hill about 20 years ago, so I know what an ideal golf course should look like. There's a lot of room for improvement at Genesee Valley.
But you're never going to see a county-operated golf course on a par with an Oak Hill, right?
Well, it'll never be on a par with Oak Hill, but it would be nice to see a lot of improvement.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I understand that. And I've been out to some of these courses in recent years, and it's been occasionally rough. Jack, thanks for the call. I appreciate that.
Evan, to that point, you know, while it may not be manicured like Oak Hill, that's one thing. But our courses are absolutely beautiful. They have beautiful settings. As a high schooler, I played at Durand Eastman, and you can see the lake in front of you as you're coming up on some of the holes. So we have by far one of the most beautiful settings for some of our courses. So maybe we won't have roughs that are, you know, perfectly manicured to Oak Hill, but we should have extremely beautiful course conditions, considering the amount of money that we put into them.
But does that require raising the fees for people to play them, Joe?
You know, that's a good question. It's something that we're going to have to ask. The fees need to stay low, though, because this isn't a public course. It's not a private course. So we need to make sure that the fees stay low so that everyone can play.
But do they have to be lower than the Eagle Vales, Greystones, et cetera's of the world?
I think they should be because we want to make sure that they have access, that everyone has access to play. But that being said, that still shouldn't diminish the quality of the courses. If we get the right contractor out there, I think we can have, you know, conditions that look like that.
Jake sends an email that says, "This screams of chronic mismanagement of public funds without even the most basic forms of accountability and oversight." And if you want to join the program for a few more minutes with Joe Morelli Jr., a Democratic lawmaker in the Monroe County Legislature, the number is 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Again, reading from the county's response, I got this from the county this afternoon, and again, I should tell our listeners, the county declined to come on and talk about this, but they did refer us to a statement, and they write to us, quote, "It is telling that the report went to great lengths to portray the courses in a poor light, with the most egregious example being the review's criticism of the number of snacks at course snack stands." They're saying that's silly, and it's obviously silly. Joe?
Well, here's the thing. Let's go back to the fact that something we haven't mentioned, the county ultimately canceled its contract. So if they didn't think what the comptroller's report is accurate, if they think that this was politically motivated, well, then why'd you cancel the contract? Yep. If you think everything is as great as it sounds, then why'd you cancel it? And the answer, I think, is that it wasn't as good as it sounds. Democratic minority members have been asking this for a long time. Going back to 2003, we have asked for a review of the county courses. And so now all of a sudden, which oddly enough, we got word that the comptroller was coming in and doing a report. Then all of a sudden the county canceled the contract. Well, so if there wasn't a problem, why cancel it?
Let's get Donna in Rochester. Donna, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, we always like hearing that, Donna.
Thanks. Very quick question. I'm deeply upset by what I'm hearing today. And I want to know, I'm a firm believer in action and taking action and telling the Brooks administration, you know, this is unacceptable. What can I do as a taxpayer, as somebody who lives in Irondequoit and very close to the Duran Eastman course, what I can do to make my voice heard? And Evan, I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for the call, Donna. I will first say before Joe jumps in on that Monroe County, having sent us a statement, they're not here to necessarily rebut that, but they would say that you're maybe overreacting to a politically tinged report. Joe Morelli Jr. is saying absolutely not. And well, how would you answer Donna's question?
Well, first of all, thanks, Donna, for the question. I think what people who use the courses and all taxpayers should do is write to the administration. Hey, what's going on? We want answers. I'm asking for a bipartisan panel, Democrats, Republicans, let's get together. The audit asks for, within 90 days, a corrective action plan. And I believe that it should involve all of us in the county coming together and figuring out what that plan is. We've talked about having someone else operate it. I think that's a good idea, who that operator is. It should be mentioned that when the contract was first signed in 1997, Jack Tyndale Company was the third suggested operator for the golf courses, but they went with him anyways. And then we need to implement some sort of oversight. How are we going to make sure that the county is getting what they put into it? I go back to the fact that the county could have financially benefited from a percentage of the sales. Had they checked the books and made sure that money was coming in properly, we could be in a better financial situation. Now what we're going to have to do is invest a lot of money into fixing the courses, getting them back up to par, excuse the pun there. Yep. But it's going to require a lot of money. So I think taxpayers should reach out to the administration and tell them that they don't want to just hear the response of, well, this is politically motivated.
And before I get to Mary in Rochester, and Mary, hang in there, you're next. Couldn't Tyndale Corp, couldn't Monroe County say, you're talking about putting more money into the golf course, which is just an indication that it is expensive to maintain golf courses at a high level, that they did the best they could, and that they tried to keep it under occasionally difficult weather circumstances, and that this is sort of the hand you're dealt right now?
Well, the comptroller's report says that they didn't do the best they could. What it actually says is when they were supposed to invest $100,000 every single year for 5 years, they didn't. They came short of that. So that's really the issue. I believe that we can have beautiful golf courses, and I think everyone in Monroe County should feel that we should have beautiful golf courses. And this is just a sign that the county didn't do its job in oversight and making sure that there was proper staffing and money wasn't put into the courses.
But if you believe that this audit is credible, mm-hmm. shouldn't the concern be less about the condition of the golf courses and more about where did that $100,000 go? I mean, I'm not saying $100,000 was gone every year, but where did that $250,000 go? Where did the money go that was supposed to be invested? Shouldn't you be concerned about that first and foremost?
Well, that's one of the questions we need to ask. And the real question is, what was that money? Where did that money come from? I think is a big issue. Was it all of county taxpayer dollars? Was it money that Tyndale himself was supposed to invest from his portion? That's sort of the answer that I need before we can sort of move on. And I think that's what all of us on our side of the aisle are going to continue to ask.
This is Mary in Rochester. Mary, thanks for calling Connections.
Yes, thank you. I just turned on the radio and saw that you were talking about the golf courses. Now, I'm a golfer, and I've enjoyed playing the golf courses, Churchill and Genesee Valley. I have not had any complaints about those courses this past year. I do not play Durand. I think quite a few complaints are coming from the Durand people. Now, my question is this. If Mr. Tyndale started being the director of the golf courses in 1997, that would be 17 years. Is that correct? Did he start then?
That's correct. Yep. 1997 is when that contract was first signed. And then he had several options, which the administration, it had changed. Originally fell under the Doyle administration and then under the Brooks administration. But those contracts were continued to be, the options were renewed.
Okay. My next question is this the first audit that's been done since Mr. Tyndale was in charge?
By the state, it's the first state audit that has been done. The county did several audits along the way, but they didn't follow any real auditing rules. They just sort of looked at the books and said everything's okay.
Okay, my question is, why didn't they do a proper audit? I'm talking about the county. That really surprises me. Aren't they paid to do a regular audit?
Well, yeah, and that's part of what my concern is and what has been a concern, Mary, for many of my colleagues in the minority, is that we have continued to ask for audits to be done over and over and over. And the county just simply ignored those requests, or when they did their audits, they didn't provide us with information on what the audits contained and ultimately didn't follow auditing practices, which is what the state audits report.
Well, that strikes me as very, very, very poor. I don't know if you remember Gordon Urlacher.
I don't.
You remember that name?
I don't.
He was our police chief here at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a problem about money. And at that time, I thought they had started having people report directly every day about money. I'm talking about county employees. Apparently, that hasn't been followed. Am I correct on that?
That's correct. It wasn't followed. And actually, what the contract...
Well, you didn't answer my question, sir, about Gordon Urlacher and when those programs were started. It sounds like we didn't learn after Mr. Urlacher went to jail about funds missing, et cetera.
Well, so
they didn't follow the plan.
And that's exactly what
is that correct?
That's exactly what happened here is that the county never checked to make sure that on a daily basis money was being put in, and that's one of the issues that the state audit found.
Right.
Was that every single day...
Okay, is this Mr. Morelli I'm talking to?
Mr. Morelli
yes,
Jr.,
that's correct.
Yes.
And so what the state audit required...
If that is the case, I would say the first people that we need to look at is the county and leave the poor man that's operating the courses, which is quite a huge job, leave him alone until the county looks at things. I mean, to have the state come in and do it sounds very, very poor management, and it doesn't do well for Ms. Brooks at all.
And I think you and I, Mary, are on the same page on that.
Yeah, and Mary, I appreciate the call. I want to make sure that Joe felt like he had a chance to respond there. But what about her point saying, you know, maybe we're being unfair to Tyndale Corp. Maybe they're doing the best they can.
Well, but the problem I go back to is that they were supposed to invest money every single year, which they didn't. Now, the county should have been on top of that. The county should.
And that's Mary's point. Mary's point is who's on top of it on a daily, weekly, monthly basis?
That's what I want to know. And that's certainly a question that after reading the report last night, that was one of my questions is who is responsible? And it comes down to accountability. In Monroe County, the accountability factor at the administration level is sometimes not there. We have questions. We want answers. We as taxpayers deserve it. The minority members, the Democratic members in the county legislature continue to ask these questions. And so we're going to go back. We've read the report. We're going to get together as a group and say, okay, what are our questions? And the county better be prepared to answer them.
All right, last question, and we'll let Joe go and take the shortest break in radio because we're going to shift gears here in just a second. Joe, if at the end of this discussion a proposal comes out that says, look, it's been 17 years under Tyndale Corp, and it's hard business to begin with. Maybe we should sell the golf courses. Maybe the county would be better off not finding a new manager or doing it on the county's own, but just selling them to a private owner and getting out of that business entirely. Would you be open to that?
No. I want those courses to remain public courses that the county is responsible for a couple of reasons. One, it goes back to making sure that people who can't afford these somewhat expensive greens fees are able to play golf. That's a big factor for me. The other thing is I think that there is money to be made in the golf course. I think that the county can start to get some of that money back. We talk about these pro shops, which have golf clubs and bags and towels, all of this stuff. We could start to stock them, and the county can make money off of that. So I think there's some money to be made there. And, you know, again, it goes back to these are our courses. I don't want to lose them. I think the county just needs to be on top of them better.
Joe Morelli, Jr., thank you for taking the time to come
thank
in and talk
you.
To us
I
about this.
I appreciate it.
We'll talk much more as this issue progresses. And a reminder again, we invited Monroe County and the folks from the Parks Department, the folks who work on this issue, to come in and join us. They referred us to a statement, and I'm happy to also relay that on our social media and other various sites because I want to make sure their opinion is heard, which is that they think this is a political hit and that they think that this is essentially that the controller has gotten it all wrong. Short break now, and heard from Donna calling. Always nice to hear new voices and new callers. You can do that any day you want on this program. We also have people listening online on our mobile app or on WXXINews.org. Jude in Seneca Falls listening online. Nice to hear all the new faces and voices here on Connections here. I'm Evan Dawson. Short break and back with you next. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on the next Connections, we're drilling into the new Paul Ryan plan. The former vice presidential candidate has put forward a new plan on how to reduce poverty. Instead of analyzing the politics of the plan, we're looking at the policy. How would it work? What would it cost? Who would benefit? Would it help the poor? Inside the Paul Ryan anti-poverty plan coming up on the next Connections.
Harvard Business School is launching a new program online about which a question. Can they reach more students without diluting the brand?
Our approach is really designed explicitly to strengthen the brand by illustrating through these offerings what the quality of a Harvard Business School education is.
All right, if they say so, I'm Kai Rizdal, online education and the Ivy League identity next time on Marketplace from APM.
This evening at 6:30.
I'm Evan Dawson. Welcome back to Connections. A week ago today, we spent an hour talking about the rise in interest in bicycling in the city of Rochester, in the suburbs, in the Finger Lakes, in cities like Geneva, where more people are choosing a bicycle as a daily transportation option. Maybe not for every route that you take, but sometimes to work, maybe sometimes the grocery store, etc. And I admit, I was blown away at the response. I mean, the phones were flooded the entire hour. We had an enormous response online, and I got through roughly a third of the subject matter I wanted to get to. So I asked the folks who are really some of the really prominent people in local bicycling, if they would come back on occasion to hit different topics that we didn't quite get to. And so we're going to spend the rest of this hour with Harvey Botsman, and Harvey's going to talk about a number of issues, but first, a little background on you, Harvey. What's your official title? Bicycle czar?
No.
They
no.
prefer that?
Probably bicycle tour author. I write tour books. I bicycle a lot. I do a lot of advocacy.
And I'm looking at one of your books, right. Round Lake, Ontario, A Bicyclist Tour Guide. And so you write, you bicycle, and you do bicycle tours. But in this right. building, when I mentioned the word bike touring, a lot of people said, what exactly is bike touring?
All right. Bike touring is meaning getting on your bike and going someplace. Instead of using a car or a walking, you're going someplace fairly far. Many times it could mean that you're going to spend at least one night outside. You could stay in a hotel or you can camp like I do. When you camp, it's usually called loaded touring. You're going with bags on your bicycle, nothing on your back because it makes you bend over. And that might include a sleeping bag, a tent, some clothing, some cooking equipment.
So you've gone out on bike tours with all of these things on your bike, but not on your back?
That's right. Everything goes in bags, which are called panniers or panniers, and they sit on a rack, either on the front or the back or both, and you then carry everything you have mm-hmm. with you. It's almost the same equipment as backpacking.
Okay, but you're protecting your back by not carrying it on a backpack
right.
there, because that was my first... My instinct was that you just load up as much as you can in a backpack, but it's quite the opposite.
Right, because you'll be bending over. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so on these bike tours, what's the farthest you have traveled?
Oh, down the East Coast, 1,800 miles around.
How many days?
Oh, 82.
82 days.
Yes, I take my time. I try not to travel more than 50 miles a day.
Mm-hmm.
And if I feel like traveling 20, so I'll travel 20. Take a day off for rest at least once a week. And you're going to see things. I'm not going to rush between locations. If I'm at a place with a museum or a nice beach or something else, that a mountain or climb, when I went down the West Coast, I was near Queet's rainforest, which is in the Olympic Range. And so I biked up to the tree line and then walked up to the glacier. Things like that you can do.
And if you're in a car, you often see a mountain when you're driving past it on the way to somewhere else, as opposed to if you're on a bike tour, you can make any choice you want on where to stop and go.
Correct. You can stop, long as there's a time element. I mean, if you have work, you have to get back at a certain time. Or if you're dependent, like I generally do when I'm bike touring, on public transportation, then you may have a ticket that's a certain day or time. I try to always have an open ticket. Back or for or going someplace.
All right, so we've been talking about some of the more far-ranging trips, but give me something realistic for someone who, because again, a week ago on this program, we heard from a lot of folks who are just getting into bicycling more regularly, whether it's to the grocery store, to work, for fun with the kids on a weekend, etc. But if they want a bike tour for the first time, what is a realistic tour in this region that you could do?
Wonderful day tour from Rochester to Hamlin Beach State Park. And you could bring a tent and sleep over at Hamlin, or to Letchworth State Park, which has cabins. And you could rent a cabin and then come back the next day or in 2 days later. If you're in Geneva, you can go down to Keuka Lake State Park, or you can go to a number of the private campgrounds in the Finger Lakes, which have cabins also, so that you don't have to bring everything you need. You can stay at a bed and breakfast or a small motel. Any of these types of places are possible. Stay overnight, enjoy yourself, do whatever. A lot of times I'll go to Niagara Falls as my first trip, and staying someplace in Ontario, in Orleans County overnight, and then go the next day to Niagara Falls. Sometimes I'll go from here to Ithaca And from Ithaca, I will, and I'll stay around Sampson State Park or in Geneva, and then come back the next day. You can do these things on a weekend, a long weekend.
And here's Marty on Twitter saying, interesting idea, but I don't want to be on a bike that long on an interstate. Well, Harvey, you better explain.
Well, in New York State, first of all, it's illegal for you to be on the interstate. Generally, you would go on New York State highways, New York 31, for instance. Many of the highways have by law, New York State highways must have a 4-foot paved shoulder. These are the highways maintained by the state of New York. It's New York State Department of Transportation. Or 4-foot or more paved shoulder, white striped from the motor vehicle lane. It doesn't mean that you can't ride in the lane. You certainly can. That's legal, long as you are going with the flow of traffic. But most of us will ride on the shoulder, on that paved shoulder. A good example is Lake Ontario State Parkway, or even better, Bike Route 5, which goes through Geneva. And that's usually it's New York 5 and 20. That has, in fact, a 12-foot paved shoulder.
We're talking to Harvey Botsman, who is an author, a bicyclist, and written bicyclist tour guides, has gone long distances on his bike as we talk about bicycle tours. Is bike okay shorthand, or does bike connote motorcycle, by the way? I always wonder that. You prefer bicycle, don't you?
Bicycle is preferable, but it's... Either way, generally you can know what people are talking about.
But we're talking about bicycle tourism, and it's also important to talk about safety, I think. And you know, interestingly enough, Harvey, last week, some of the complaints, to the extent that we didn't get very many, but some of the complaints were that some people like to say that, well, when I'm driving and I see a cyclist on the road, sometimes they ignore traffic laws, or they're wild. And I know the people in the cyclist community feel a little bit of a gut punch whenever they hear that, because it's usually one or two bad apples that gets a motorist to think that all bicyclists behave that way. But let's talk about safety, especially if you want to get started.
Absolutely, because according to the law, New York State Vehicle and Traffic Law, a bicyclist has the same rights and privileges and the same responsibilities, and that's the most important part, the same responsibilities as a motor vehicle driver. That means you ride on the right side of the road, you tend to watch out for traffic, you tend to stop for stop signs, you must stop for stop signs, you must stop for red lights, you can't blow through a yellow caution light, all those same types of laws. You can't have earphones on, like I saw someone today, and can't hear anything because of that, or you can't be texting or talking on the phone. The same laws apply. The biggest problem with bicycling, of course, is enforcement. It's much harder for law enforcement to enforce the law. One, a bicyclist who's doing something illegal and might be stopped can easily scoot away down an alley or someplace else. Not very good, but hey, that's what can happen. So it's much harder for law enforcement officers to actually capture or get these people. Plus, there's no real fine system in the state of New York for bicyclists. There's a fine system for motor vehicles, but there's no real fine system. Although if you are bicycling and you are intoxicated, you get the same, and you're caught, it's the same rules and fines.
As a DUI.
That's exactly it, yes.
You cannot bicycle after being intoxicated.
That's correct.
And I understand, in some sense you think, well, a bicycle is not a car, but imagine a bicyclist who's drunk swerving into traffic.
That's it. That's the problem, is that if they swerve into traffic, they're going to cause an accident. It's the same thing with somebody who's riding against traffic. The motor vehicle driver doesn't know if that person's going to come out into the lane or stay in the lane or someplace else. If you're a motor vehicle driver, you would not suddenly cut into a place where there's parked cars and then come back out, because then the people behind you don't know which way to go.
And so I'm looking through Harvey Botsman's pile of books here. Round Lake, Ontario. Erie Canal Bicyclist and Hiker Tour Guide. Finger Lakes Bicyclist Tour Guide. Where do they find these books, Harvey?
At times, they're sold in bike shops, but generally you would have to go to Cyclotour Guidebooks or cyclotour.com, which is my website.
Cyclotour. Cyclotour.com. If you're looking for guidebooks, because I think for those of us who haven't done this, but it sounds number
right.
one, it sounds great for fitness, recreation, it's fun, you see new places, but you don't always know the routes. And there's lots of great routes here. Have you done all of them? I assume if you've
written
them,
of
you've
them.
Done all of them.
And multiple times, too.
What is your favorite route?
Actually, Around Lake Ontario is a big favorite of mine.
Around all of Lake Ontario. Ontario?
Yes, it's 600 miles. If you go 50 miles a day, it's really 12 days, which plus 2 days off, you know, lolling on the beach on the eastern shore of Lake Ontario, visiting Toronto. It's my favorite because there's such a variety of rural riding and also big city riding and some trail riding. There's trails you can go on. You can go swing down to the Erie Canal Trail, start at the Erie Canal Trail in Rochester and then swing up at Hamlin or someplace else.
What is the best part of that 600 miles?
The best part actually is probably between, well, there's two best parts. But the nicest part for close by here is the area between Albion on Lake Ontario and the Niagara River. It's a beautiful section. It's farmland. There's fruit stands along the way. You can replenish your food and things like that.
When you talk to people who are just starting to bicycle more, and again, not even on bicycling tours, but just
right.
on a daily basis, we talked about this last week. A common concern is that city riding or municipal riding can be frightening for folks, and I understand why. And you're talking about a 600-mile trip around Lake Ontario that includes a good amount, especially in the Toronto area, of city riding. What do you say to people who are nervous about that?
The first thing I say is that there's around Toronto, there's actually from approximately St. Catharines through Toronto, it's all on a trail along the river. It can be. Sometimes it disappears. The other thing is that you should try to get used to riding on the road. And the best way you can do that is go on a street such as East Avenue, which has a parking lane. It's not really a bicycling lane, but it's a way of watching out for traffic. And particularly if you go on the weekends or on the afternoons during this time of the year, if you have an afternoon off from work, then you'll get used to being aware of where cars are and how cars come up behind you, what happens when somebody goes beep, beep, or versus beep. There's a big difference.
Do you want to explain?
Well, a little beep, beep usually means that I'm behind you, and whereas the leaning on the horn, even for an extra second, usually means get out of my way. And it's not very nice, but you have to get used to hearing that and saying, I'm here, either on the lane, if you're on the lane, and then move over a little bit, or if you're in the shoulder or on the parking lane there on East Avenue, then you just become aware and you look around. You should have a mirror on your bicycle as well. That helps to see.
Have you been involved in accidents before?
I have never had an accident, and I travel about 6,000 miles a year. I've never had an accident. I'm pretty careful. I always have panniers on my bicycle, which means that it gives the driver, the motor vehicle driver, a larger, I wouldn't say target, but a larger view of something on the road. And I always have my rear light, my rear red flashing light on, because even in a shady area, it just gives people a bigger identification to see where you are.
Another subject within bicycling that you like talking about is utilitarian cycling. And what do you mean by that?
That means when I went to the post office this morning, which is a mile and three quarters from my house, I took a bike instead of a car. And when I go to a grocery store, I usually take my bike rather than the car. It took me as much time to come here today, which is about two and a quarter miles from where I live, as it would have by car. In fact, it might have even been shorter.
Because you're finding time to park, you're dealing with all that stuff.
Right.
But why go to the post office? Why go 2 miles to the grocery store on a bicycle?
I have to go there. I have to mail a letter. I actually had to mail a book. And then if I go to the grocery store, I put all the food in my panniers. I don't carry it on the handlebar. That's actually illegal in New York State, that you can't put bags on your handlebars.
Okay, I did not know. Why is that illegal?
Because it will unbalance the
bicycle.
And particularly the steering mechanism if you make a little turn one way or the other.
All right, so what's the word you keep using that carries things for you?
Panniers or panniers. That's the French, I think. But panniers, P-A-N-N-I-E-R-S.
And where do you get those?
You can buy them in bike stores. Around town, almost every bike shop around town has at least a selection of them. Don't get very small ones because you'll suddenly need bigger ones. And you'll also need a rack on which to hang these on. And usually the back rack is sufficient.
Let's start to wrap our conversation with what people can do to really get started. If they want to try bicycling tours and they've never done it, where do you get started? Equipment-wise, planning-wise, preparation, etc.
One of the first things you'll do is try to obtain a Greater Rochester bicycling map. These are free of charge, and they're usually available at bike shops. Then you can also get out books out of the library. The public library has several books on these, not just my books, but some others. There's a way of just thinking about where you're going to go and what sort of route you do. You take a map. You can use the online map services. That's fine, too. I like using a paper map, particularly if you're first time, because you can trace the route, and these maps are fairly inexpensive. Just going to Hamlin Beach, you can use this Rochester bicycling map. It also goes down to the edge of Monroe County near Ontario County. Ontario County, the New York Bicycling Coalition, we just made up a whole series of bicycle routes within the county. As long as you start with a map and try to plow out a route of about a day's worth of riding, which let's say for the first time would be 25 miles, get some bags from, you can make these, there are online patterns on the internet, put them on your bike, put materials in them, things you might want to carry with you, a change of clothes perhaps. You also, it's best to have padded bike shorts if you're going for more than 5.
Are you saying you'll feel it if you
Yes, don't? Yeah. And what happens is people also forget to stand up. They should be standing up on a regular interval, even when they're around town, because it relieves pressure on your backside.
But you should also pack as light as you reasonably can.
Absolutely. Less is more. That's the key.
What's the largest group you have ever bicycle toured with? I mean, do people go with entire
families?
People,
entire families have bought my books and gone around Lake Ontario, gone through the Finger Lakes, used the Erie Canal book to go all the way to Albany and back one way, or then sometimes up to Montreal. You can have families, you can have individuals. I generally will tour alone, but I've gone with several people to Niagara Falls on a 2-day trip there and a 2-day trip back.
What is one place or site that's not that far from us in Rochester or the Finger Lakes, or maybe part of our region, that, you know, we know the big sites, you know, Letchworth and, you know, Niagara Falls.
Right.
But what's the place that you rode past on a bicycle tour that made you stop and say, wow?
There's a very lovely and small waterfall in Clarendon, New York. And Clarendon, New York is about halfway between here and Buffalo on New York 31. And it's just off 31, and you go down and you'll see it. That's one place. Excuse me. I think also a real nice place is Sampson State Park, south of Geneva, which is a beautiful state park. It has a museum, a World War II museum. It's where Seneca Lake, it's on Seneca Lake, which is quite magnificent. And that's out of that area of Sampson State Park. It used to be Sampson Naval Base, where they actually tested submarines during World War II. So those are two nice places very close by, which people don't think about. And I've stopped just going down to Ithaca or some other place or Watkins Glen.
Do you find yourself stopping often, though, to say, I had no plans to stop at this spot, but I'm here?
Absolutely. Little places to eat, places you wouldn't think
in, yeah,
small villages.
Point.
In Ovid or in Lolai or going west, even in Wilson along Lake Ontario, or going the other way in Wayne County. And Wayne County has all sorts of lovely places to go to.
And finally, when it comes to eating on the road, you mentioned you can stop and eat, but how often do you find yourself cooking for yourself?
If I'm going on a fairly long tour, and that would mean on the Erie Canal, you do not have to bring food. There's plenty of grocery, yep, stores, restaurants, whatever. And that's all the way going both directions. But if I'm on a long tour around even Lake Ontario, I'll tend to bring some food with me. Usually I bring, nowadays you can bring pasta, which rice, which is already pre-made, and then these aluminum things, and you can add in stuff like tuna fish, which just comes in a packet, it's not in a can. Stuff like that you can do, which is very easy.
Breakfast. Yes, talk about utilitarian.
Yes, that's the
important
thing.
That's okay.
That's it.
Food is fuel.
That's right.
Food is fuel when you're on the road, that's for sure.
You can just let oatmeal sit for a longer time, and it will blow up too. It's,
you know. Now you're making me hungry, Harvey. Harvey Botsman's the author of a number of books and cyclist tour guides, bicycle tours. You can check them out at cyclotour.com.
Correct.com.
Nice to catch up with you, Harvey. And is this the best time of year for this?
Oh, yes.
Right now.
Right now. Right through the beginning of October, mid-October. Just beautiful.
How many days a week are you out on your bicycle?
Every
single day.
Even during the rain days sometimes.
Well, just remarkable stuff. It's fun to think about where we might visit that isn't that far away, the place we've never been before. So thank you, Harvey.
You're welcome.
Nice
Thank
seeing you.
You.
Thanks to Dave Campo, our engineer behind the glass. Thank you for listening. I'm Evan Dawson. This is Connections on member-supported public radio.